Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great big wide world connected by the internet. The last three guys to do a podcast are back for our 23rd episode. Hard to believe we are almost at 25. It seems like just, well, 6 months ago that we started, which in fact it was. I'm John Morgo again, alongside
Daniel Bolton
and
Leon Brown.
Thank you so much for joining us. A lot to get to, and our good friend Sam Crenshaw is joining us right now. Hardest working man in Atlanta sports media. He's definitely got a lot on his plate right now. And Sam, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. You know, we're all busy as well. Glad we're able to get some time set aside for us to talk Atlanta sports. Sam, I want to start things off with you about college basketball, specifically Georgia State Senior Day. A pretty good performance by them against Little Rock, beat them by about 13 points. It's really neck and neck for the men on top of the Sun Belt Conference. What were your you worked that game for ESPN Plus. What were your takeaways from that contest?
Just the distribution of the points, I suppose, of the scoring. I mean, that's when all is going well with this Georgia State basketball team this year. You know it when the point distribution, the breakdown, you have 3, 4, 5 guys in double figures. That's when things work best, when they're getting transition baskets on the defense. They were getting those, you know, forcing a lot of turnovers. My goodness, they got Little Rock to turn over the ball almost 20 times, 19, 20 times in the game. So when that's happening, that is Georgia State playing at their very best. And that was great to see. It was great to see a good crowd out. What Malik Bin Levy, there was nobody left in Savannah, Georgia, man. All his family showed up, and it was great. And he's to me, he's one of the guys that really deserves it. All the seniors do, but he does. He's a guy who was, as I like to call him, he's like the Swiss Army knife, you know, for the basketball team. You know, whatever Ron Hunter needs, that's what this young man has done and learned to do throughout the 4 years that he's played. I mean, started the season with the challenge of playing the five. You know, so, okay, coach, if you believe I can play the five, I'm crazy enough to go out and play the five. And so he does that. And of course he can stretch the other team's defense because he can't hit the three ball from outside. And so he's been very valuable, to see Devin Mitchell's, outside game back on, to see Jeff Thomas's outside game back on. Those guys made no 3-pointers, those two, in that, just disastrous loss up at Coastal Carolina last weekend. So it's great to see them bounce back. The idea was to win the final three on the way to the tournament. Of course, you cap that off with a win down in Statesboro, which has been very rare for Georgia State. But if they can go to Statesboro and put off a win there next week, it would tell you that everything is really clicking with the Georgia State team going into the tournament.
And it must have been very emotional. Can you describe how the emotions were factoring in? Because here's a bunch of good players, you know, DeMarcus Simons, Malik Bin Levy, playing probably, more than likely, 95% anyway, their last home game in the sports arena.
Yeah, very much that. Jordan Tyson as well. And you know what? We maybe want to throw DeMarcus Simons in there too.
Yeah.
You know, playing the final game. They were all on the floor together right down to the last 2 minutes of the game, and all five of them came out together, DeMarcus, along with the seniors. And to me, that was very, very symbolic for those of us who, you know about him, know his plight, know what he has to potential to do. There's some things he's got to, you know, really work on to fulfill that potential. But we all kind of knew what we were looking at yesterday. So, yeah, there was a great deal of emotion, a great deal of appreciation for what they've done for the program and where they've lifted it to. But some guys who learn. And to me, that's what the college game is. It is all about. You talk about the schools with the one and dones. The guys come in for a moment. You hope they get to know each other a little bit. I mean, even the Power Five programs do it all the time. But that's why a program like a Georgia State is dangerous at tournament time, because the guys have spent the time around each other. They learned each other. As I like to say, you can turn the lights out in the gym, and they'll find each other. You know, and that, you can't do that in 1 year. You know, that's stuff that happens after several years together and growing, going through some adversity, learning from that. And that's when you end up with a team that can do that type thing. So to me, that's what makes the tournament time so interesting. what gives a team like Georgia State a great chance to win if they can go in and get at least a 14 seed in the tournament. But, there was a good bit of emotion feeling in the room, especially going from the very beginning, from the starting lineups when they were introduced, when all the seniors got to start the game. And, having their families out on the court. There's nothing like senior day. And I worked the games with Rodney Truck Turner, who obviously played basketball at Georgia State. And he gets reflective when he talks about senior day. He talks about how, you won't get everybody regrouped, so you still got a basketball game to play.
Right.
But it's an awful lot of reflection and memories to go into the day.
All right, I've got two more questions before I turn it over to the panel. The first one is, Sam, do you think Georgia State is where they need to be heading into March? I mean, they're tops in the Sun Belt. It's a crazy situation where things are going right now. Texas State has a game with UT Arlington. We've got the game with Southern. Could go any number of ways. Do you think Georgia State is where they want to be heading into the Sun Belt tournament and later potentially postseason berth?
Yeah, first of all, because they're healthy, and that's the big thing. You don't have anybody, none of your starters are out with any type of nagging injury that will prevent them from playing the way you need them to play. Just ask Georgia Southern the difference with that. They're a team that was beset by injuries, back before the holidays, and it's really limited what they can do. They've learned to improvise from it, but there's some guys that were missing that they would much rather have in the mix. Not so with the Georgia State team. They've been able to stay healthy, and everybody goes out and produces and does the things that they know to do and should do. They should be able to be where they want to be when they get to New Orleans. Now, did they drop some conference games along the way that they should have won? Yes. And I mean, that's the thing that are concerning. But, the conference is tough. Mm-hmm. And, the very challenging non-conference schedule that they played before the first of the year helped a lot. They got some quality wins under their belts. They got two Southeastern Conference wins under their belt. That's a major thing you wanted to accomplish. You may say, well, it was Alabama and it was Georgia, right? It's Alabama and Georgia. But, of course, the tournament committee is going to look at, hey, those are teams from the Southeastern Conference. And those are the teams that have always managed to wiggle off the hook, when it comes to Georgia State. Not this year. And they're big going into their resume, for the tournament committee once they get to the other side of the Sun Belt tournament.
And finally, before I turn it over to Leon and Daniel, you've got one more senior game to work that Saturday when the women come in. Does your preparation to call a game, does that change at all when you know you're going to have a senior day kind of festivities going on?
Yeah, because first of all, your schedule changes. the schedule, the timing goes off just a bit, and you kind of allow for that. You kind of allow for that. And, for senior day, I always try to dig and find some different things about overall the time that they played at the school, which is kind of unusual when we talk about the seniors, different for the seniors for the men as for the seniors for the women, because you have some who only had this one season to play.
Right.
You have a lot of them who played their last game, and that was the challenge with this team all alone. The fact you had a lot of people with college basketball playing experience, just not a lot of experience playing together. And you can't help but tip your hat to Gene Hill. My goodness, if there's someone else who deserves Sun Belt Coach of the Year, I want to see who it is.
Yeah, he's got my vote.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, if anybody deserves it, he has more than earned it this year by keeping everybody in the boat, first of all, and then by getting people to trust. That was the big word that he used when I talked with him, trust. Well, these folks learned to trust each other. And they have, and it has been refreshing. It has been fun to watch. They're never out of a game. They pull hard for each other. And, I've enjoyed being around this team. I always enjoyed being around, the women's team. But just to see them have that success and see those smiles on faces after games, to me, it's been a remarkable season. And that it raises the bar for what's to come. And for what you can go and recruit and possibly join the program, because they see the evidence of a turnaround on Decatur Street. So let's see if that can keep rolling. And I'm curious to see what this team does. To me, they got to be considered a pretty dangerous team, going into the tournament. Because you have so many players who, especially I think it starts with people like Allison Johnson and Walnetta Wright, who say, we had to sit out and wait. Now we're going to play, and you guys come on. We're going to pull it. You guys come on, jump on board. And to me, that's what they've challenged their teammates to do each and every week.
Yeah, I'm probably going to vote Allison Johnson as my newcomer of the year, and I think my player of the year, I'm going to go with DJ Williams of Coastal Carolina, even though she broke her foot. Actually, probably – when you look at that, she broke her foot in a game last week, and then Coastal just completely loses their last game. I want to say it's to Louisiana Monroe. I'm not 100% sure on that. I can't remember who it was, but you take one player of that caliber out, and you know, and she is the leading scorer in the Sun Belt, so that's my votes. We're speaking with Sam Crenshaw, who pretty much does a lot of everything in Metro Atlanta, ESPN 3 Voice of Georgia State. GPB has his own morning show on 92.9 The Game. And we'll let our other panel take over from now. Leon, what do you got for Sam?
Hey, Sam.
How you doing?
Oh, it's good. So, you know, with Georgia State pretty much dominating the Sun Belt for the most part, you know, do you consider that to be like a blessing or a curse, you know, for as the team is concerned, as far as getting more ranked opponents on for the schedule next year?
Well, that was something that the commissioner, you know, kind of mandated everyone after last year in order to have a consideration for a higher seed at tournament time. If you watch Joe Lenardi or any of the people who do the brackets, the early season brackets, you've seen the Georgia State team before suffering some conference setbacks, and they were as much as a 13 seed in some brackets. I mean, that's changed now, and you know, I think if they win the tournament, they run the table from here, they can still get a 14. The 13 is probably off the table, but he wanted them to do better than a 15.
Right.
And just to give them a chance, a fighting chance in a tournament. And so I think everybody was mandated to upgrade their non-conference schedules. And I think the schedule that Georgia State had was a very challenging schedule. Road games at places like Tuscaloosa, places like Manhattan, Kansas, even a road game to Montana, because that's another tournament team. Those guys should make the tournament from their conference. That was a thing. A lot of 20 win teams, a lot of teams that have been tournament teams in the past. I mean, it was a strong and a very good schedule. We wish to have seen more of those teams come to Decatur Street, but you know, they'd go on the road, and that's part of the challenge. If you can go on the road and win some of those games, you know, in adverse conditions, that looks even more impressive to the tournament committee.
Yeah, because I was looking at, like, I think we were discussing last week about how, you know, you got teams like Georgia Tech. You know, we didn't see them on the schedule this year, but we did see.
Well, you won't see them on the schedule
unless they're able to pull an end around and get them in an 8-team tournament at some tropical location. We did with Georgia.
But they will never go that. Across town.
The thing with the Georgia thing, that wasn't even supposed to happen. I think Indiana dropped out of that tournament, and the space came available, and Georgia State took it, and Quiz is kept. Georgia found out Georgia State was coming, and they tried to see if they could back out, but they couldn't. You know, so I mean, right now Georgia and Georgia Tech programs want no part of Georgia State because, first of all, they're winning, you know, at a place with a lesser facility, with lesser, you know, amenities. But also, they're doing it with Georgia players from Georgia, the folks that Tech and Georgia, where they can't get.
Right.
You know, but for some reason, they can end up, you know, on Decatur Street. So that's the thing. I mean, we'll see. You know, Georgia's trying to get a turnaround. They've got the big signing. Let's see what it means, you know, for Georgia to land and Anthony Edwards and what it means for them going forward. But you know, for regular season games, you know, don't hold your breath for that.
Yeah, they want no part of them. And now you're going to have teams that Georgia State has beaten, like Alabama. They're not going to want any part of them. Ole Miss, we're going to run out of SEC teams to schedule, Sam. That's the problem.
That's a nice problem to have, but you want that reputation. That's the thing. You might have to go out of conference to get them. You might have to go to an ACC school. You might have to go to some Big 12. But then there's some other strong mid-major conferences. If you get some Conference USA, you know, some of those teams to play. The tournament committee knows that there's some mid-major leagues that play some strong ball. And the thing of it is, you may have to do like Montana. You know, they may come to visit you, but you got to go back to visit them, something like that. And Georgia State has shown they're not going to run from that. They won't back down from that. So that's interesting to see going forward, especially if this team gets to the tournament and has some success. You know, will that encourage other major conference teams to schedule Georgia State, or will they run the other way too? We'll have to see.
Yeah, you made that trip to Montana. I have to ask, did you see a moose?
Didn't see a moose. I saw a taxidermied grizzly bear in the airport because they are the Grizzlies. And when we got to the team hotel, I mean, it had their first snowfall when we got out there. I mean, there was snow on the ground on the side of the mountains. It looks nice, but it was cold. And I asked the lady at the desk. I said hi. I said so. How far away are the bears? And she said, well, the bears, they're about 10, 15 miles away before you start seeing a bear or two. But we've had a problem with mountain lions coming into town. I was like, nice.
Sweet.
I'll only be moving when the team bus moves, thank you.
Yep.
Well, you didn't have Kim Bauer with you, so that probably helped. Anyway, that's like I said, that's a helpful problem to have. So that Georgia State is dealing. Talk about Conference USA. Yeah, Georgia State women's been playing a lot of Conference USA teams, and I think some of them will be coming to the sports arena next season. I think Florida International is due to come back. Maybe Rice. I'm not sure about Middle Tennessee State because that may have been a one off because KK Williams is from that area. Mm-hmm. That might be how that game was done. So it should be interesting to see. I was joking. I mean, we had four games on the road at Conference USA sites this season, went 2-2. I was joking. We were applying for probationary membership at this point.
But playing very well. And that was the thing. That was early in the schedule.
Yes, it was.
While the team was still learning each other, while they're still learning going through the trusting process. And look at what they were able to accomplish. Just the start they got off to.
Yeah,
was so refreshing and so exciting.
Oh yeah, I wanted to try to switch to the NBA a little bit.
Go ahead.
With this young man that you guys have drafted. I mean, whose idea was this?
and my question to you is, who is your rookie of the year in the NBA right now?
Oh, it's Trae Young. Without question. I don't see how you can't put Trae Young up there, man, with what he's doing so far. Now he did get ejected today, but they're going to test him. He's a fiery guy, man, you know. But he's doing such a tremendous job over there with Atlanta. I think a lot of people may have had doubts about him because of his size and what he brings to the table. But this kid can light it up, man, from anywhere on the floor. So I like him as my rookie of the year.
Absolutely,
I like him as well. I like him as well, and he's learned. He's grown. Mm-hmm. The NBA game, it's a different game. It's a different game from the college game. And that was his big challenge, was to learn to defend, to improve as a defender. He always a fantastic facilitator. My goodness,
yes. He
passes, this guy lets up. And now he's got the scoring thing down where he contributes that. I was mentioning on our radio show, 92.9 The Game, we were talking about it this weekend. And to me, he and John Collins have the potential to be the next Stockton and Malone.
Sports
NBA. That's what it reminds me of. You know, so if you watched basketball from that time, just what that duo could do night after night after night, they have the potential to have that same type of impact. Now, what do we do going forward? Is what's the team do? Yeah, we're playing for the ping pong balls. What do we get with the ping pong balls? But I think the light is going on for any free agents who love, you know, like I said, the biggest thing that the Hawks have to do is pull that free agent who loves to come to Atlanta just to hang out. You know, who will buy a home here but won't play here.
Right.
You know,
right.
To me, if you want to be a part of the scene here in Atlanta and live here, why not play here and look at what you're going to get a chance to be a part of? And I just think the light has gone on with a lot of people nationwide. They didn't hurt what they both did All-Star Weekend, you know, up in Charlotte. They both showed themselves very well. And so, you know, I like it. And bring my Trae Young, he's tough. He's a lot tougher than you might
exactly
think. You know, and he's shown, had to shown a lot of that this season because he's being tested. There's some veteran guards who've gone at him, and you know, he's had to fight his way through some things in physicality. He gets it, and you know, he's got it. And I think he's been a very shrewd pick for this Hawks team. And I think the city and the community has caught on to it as well. And to me, that's the biggest thing, because you know how the NBA has always been in this town. We show up for whoever the star players are. You know, everybody shows up. I mean, the Lakers went town not too long ago. And like I always say, everybody went to Dick's and Champs and bought the Laker jerseys and made sure and tied the tag down in the back and not get anything spilled in it so they could take it back the next day. You know, and so, you know, the Lakers lost, and hopefully they didn't spill anything and that stuff, and they took it back to Champs and got their money back.
Exactly.
But speaking of them and the Lakers, you know, it was a move that Trae Young put on LeBron James that game that has everybody questioning LeBron James' defense and age. And as I, as a Laker fan, I'm be honest, I kind of resent that, but it's like it kind of got me raising an eyebrow too. Like, man, how deep does LeBron dig in on defense in the regular season?
Well, I ask you this. How is it looking like it's worth it to bring him out there right now? Because he can't be long term. And are you going to mortgage your long term to try to make something happen, you know, in a short period of time with him? Because, you know, I don't say the window's closing, but he's never missed time with any type of injury. Was the groin that he had. He's out about a month. We've never seen that from LeBron James before. So, I mean, the time, the clock ticks for everybody. And they're on the clock. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, has it been a total waste for him, for Magic, for everybody? Sure, it's got them on TV. It's made them something that people want to tune in and curiosity. And the fact that so much of the talent in the NBA is on the West Coast, we all got dark circles under our eyes as NBA fans because you got to stay up late to see the players you want to see.
Right.
But, but at the same time, is it really going to pay off for Magic? And does he get who gets the heat if this doesn't pay off for the Lakers? You know, who does it? You know, so that's, to me, that's the thing you look at now. I mean, they lost to Phoenix last night. My goodness, they can't get a win there. You know, they're really in trouble. I think the locker room is, everybody's walking on eggshells. They know that they're being evaluated every moment that they play, and that people in the front office want to make moves to make LeBron happy and bring in people that he wants to play with, and people who want to play with him. And I don't know if what they're seeing right now is a deterrent to people who want to come out there or makes people want to come out there. To me, instead of answering questions, to me, he's helped produce even more questions.
I've heard now they're trying to backtrack things, saying, oh, this is just a year for everyone to feel each other out, to draw in free agents for next season. Kind of like now they're lowering expectations that as there's a good chance the Lakers won't even make the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think you can lower that. I don't think you can backtrack that. If he's on your team and you made some moves to get people in place that he kind of wanted, that team is supposed to make the playoffs. That team is supposed to at least be the eighth best team in the West. And right now they're not. And I don't know if you hang that on the coach. I don't know if guys are, you know, because you got some guys, young guys who maybe in all of them. I mean, we see what certain people get on the court or on the field with certain players and they don't play their best. They could play better. We saw that here in Atlanta with Michael Vick was quarterback with Roddy White. Roddy White for a period couldn't catch a cold from Michael Vick. You know, and Michael Vick leaves, and all of a sudden you got a standard quarterback back there who's not going to run, and all of a sudden Roddy White became this force in the National Football League. So it could be, and Roddy admits it. He was in awe of Vick when he would get in the huddle with him. And yeah, all of his friends would ask, man, what's it like you on the field with Michael Vick? So, I mean, that's what a lot of these young guys are getting, being on the court with LeBron. And you know, being as someone they've watched, someone they've idolized, someone they wanted to emulate, and all of a sudden, poop, here he is, and he's on your team. and that can go well, or that can, you know, have some disastrous outcomes. And right now, that's kind of what's happening, I think, the Laker team as well. Obviously, these guys are playing for their careers. They're in Los Angeles. They're on a team that's a high-profile team in the league. They want to stay there, but at what cost? And are they able to do what they need to satisfy their team's need and, you know, stay on the good side of this mega star that's been brought in to make them relevant again?
If you notice, though, the Lakers are built a lot like the Hawks to a certain degree. I say this because you look at it, it's LeBron James, who's really the only player that's locked in for the next 4 years, and a bunch of mercenaries and four rookies. Well, they're not rookies anymore, but you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what I'm noticing, because I like what I've seen on the Bucks game, you know, they were able to compete offensively. I mean, anytime you have a team that's able to put up more than 110 points, 115 points a game, you know, they can bring offensively, but the problem is that they can't stop anybody. You know, and you can't win like that on any level, you know, with any sport. You look at football, you know, and being a San Diego Charter fan. I'm not going to call them L.A. Chargers. We're going to call the Charter fans.
You're going to mess Daniel up some more.
You did it. You did it.
They got to play in that JV stadium down there.
Man. You know.
JUCO stadium. Okay, go ahead.
Right. or even with the Falcons this year, you know, who weren't bad offensively, but defensively. Yeah. You know, if you got to bring to every game loaded weapons and you got to shoot it out every game, you're just going to go 8-8. You know, you can't do your defense. You know, like the old saying goes, if we score, we might win, but if you don't score, we will win.
Yeah.
That's the mentality that the Lakers do not have. You know, it's starting to affect the culture. See, when you look at the Hawks, are pretty much, you know, people are like what they see. You know, you got pretty much Trae Young, you got a 42-year-old Vince Carter.
Who got one out Friday night, man. Four overtimes. Oh, man, this was out there puffing and wheezing.
Yeah, he was. He really showed his age out there that night, didn't he?
but you know what, though? He's having fun. I don't know what he expected when he came to Atlanta for this year, you know, just to be a locker room presence and just to be a veteran that guys could talk to. He's been having an opportunity to really be on the court more. They've needed him to, but I think because he's gone out and he's played well in spurts.
Yeah.
You know, he's shown you more of the old Vince Young on some nights. And
as opposed to being an old Vince Young.
Yeah.
Vince Carter, that's right.
Just being an old dude. You know, he's out there and he's leading by example. And to me, that's a bonus. If you can get a player like that and not only say, hey, this is what I used to do with guys and coach at him, look at what this guy does after all these years. Look at what he, you know, look at what he's beating you at doing. Is that kind of example. To me, maybe that's paying off a little bit more for this team as well. And when we talk about the things that are making this Hawks team compete the way it competes every night.
I got a question for you, Sam, and we'll probably let you off on this because we know you got to go to bed. You're tired.
No, I've had my nap. I'm wide awake now.
Good.
I'm watching the second half of Atlanta United, and I'm going to see if the Atlanta Legends can play like a football team tonight.
Oh,
that's a whole other kettle.
That's a whole other ball game.
That's a whole other can of worms over there.
Speaking of football, we were talking about the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, they made some roster moves. They've also made some coaching changes. There was one move that made me cringe a whole lot, and that was the loss of Matt Bryant. Were there any moves that made you cringe?
That one definitely.
Yeah.
That one definitely. And I mean, just this weekend, we re-signed Matt Schaub as our backup. We give him a 2-year extension, so we know that Matt Schaub, who's been a backup for the Falcons going back to the days of Michael Vick. Will still be around. Familiar face, because I know we didn't really produce much if Matt goes down. Let's just hope Matt Ryan don't go down.
Yeah.
you know, and we're saving some money in that area. I understand that part, too. And that was supposedly the reason why, you know, Matt Bryant is no longer with this team. Matt Bryant is, aside from being Steady Eddie, and the guy who's been so reliable for this team for so long, also is just a first-class man, okay? Yeah. And you had to be around the team and cover the team. And for example, at 11 Alive, we traveled with the team, so we got to know him. But I'll tell you something, even since I've left and I do some stuff with City of Atlanta TV and City Hall, we look for things like on Tuesdays when the Falcons come into the city to do volunteer work or go to schools or things of that nature. People who know the NFL schedule of a player during the regular season, you play on Sunday. Tuesday is usually your off day, your down day. You don't have to come to the headquarters. You get to spend time with your family, your wife. Probably has you the honey do list, and you're driving carpool, picking up kids from school. And Matt Bryant has what, 6-7 kids, and obviously, dad is away a lot during the course of a season.
Yeah.
But there was this Tuesday several years back, and it was after the Falcons had won out in Dallas, and here he and DeAndre Freeman were over at they were over at the Bellwood Boys and Girls Club. And they were over there helping to, they were doing some cleanups on the outside. Crews were doing work on the outside of the building. On the inside, Matt Bryant and Free were in there painting. They were painting a room, a study hall room for these kids. And they had on Falcons t-shirts. And the kids had come from school and they were so excited to have these Falcons football players helping them fix up their Boys and Girls Club. And, it's on, you know, that's over on Hollowell, a.k.a. Bankhead, So we know that part of the town and you know, what goes on over there. Kids need a safe place to go after school to do their homework and have some computers. And here's a man with children of his own who spends his off day doing this for others. And here he is. Here's a guy with paint drops all over him and whatnot. He's there and he's got a smile on his face. He's thrilled. And when I thought about him leaving his team, I said, yeah, we lose this reliable kicker, but we lose this kind of guy, man. You know, he was genuinely happy to be there, but he loves kids. I mean, people say, well, he ain't got enough of his own to love, you know, but he's there. Look for others. And to me, that's the vision that I remember of Matt Bryant. Do I expect us to see him again? Yes, I expect to see him again. And yes, I expect him to see us again in our division. And wouldn't that be something, you know, because I totally expect him to play next season and be an asset to wherever he is. And we heard that Tampa Bay is one of those places. So, you know, we'll watch and see what happens to him. But, you know, obviously appreciate what he contributed to the team while he was here. And like I said, my thing is not just what he did, you know, on the field and in the locker room, but also, you know, in this community, we'll miss a guy like Matt Bryant.
And part of the reason they did that, as you mentioned, trying to get free up cap space. Now, it seems like a lot of that cap space is going to be taken up if they do get this work done with Grady Jarrett, though.
Yeah, but I totally expect that to happen. Grady's has proven to be a great community guy as well. Very much, I won't say on display, but present at a lot of things during Super Bowl week. There were several events that took place around the city, and you know, Mr. Blank is there, and Roger Goodell is there, and the mayor is there, and there's Grady. So he's making a lot of those appearances. One was a finishing of a field over at the Kennedy School in Kennedy Park over on the west side of Atlanta. And I remember being there at that occasion. So he's very much present at a lot of those events. You know, and he's a hometown guy, and he understands the importance of being in the community. So, I mean, that's the thing. That's why they want to get things right with him, whatever it takes. So, yeah, they're getting some cash together to do that, to keep him a part of it. But that's part of what he does for the team on the field as well. I mean, you got to have that deterrent, that stopper up the middle who can occasionally get you some pass rush. The greatest vision of him was that first half of the Super Bowl, and he was just, you know, wearing out, you know, Tom Brady. You want a guy to bottle that up and a guy who's done it in the past to be able to retain that. The brother question is Vic Beasley. Apparently we're going to stick with him. And, you know, we know he's been hot and cold. You know, right. One season he'll be on. Next season he's in the fog. We need the fog to lift when it comes to him because we need some consistent pass rush out of him. And he's like a hometown guy as well. So that's you know, the whole thing. But, yeah, the cash is to try to get things right for Grady. And to me, that's understandable.
And the NFL Combine going on this week in Indianapolis. Have you heard who the Falcons could be targeting with that number one pick in the 14th pick of the first round?
I'm hearing. I mean, obviously, Lyon is the
number one.
But I'm hearing that the defender, I'm beginning this position kid out of Houston,
Ed Oliver.
They looked at him and. He's the guy, I remember, what happened at the last game he played? He, like, walked off, didn't play, and then the coach had a little bit of a tiff out there.
Well, what happened was he was on the sidelines. They actually shut him down for the year, or he shut himself down for the year. Something happened, and he was caught on the sidelines. He was wearing a Houston hoodie. He was wearing the Houston Cougars hoodie.
Right.
And the coach kind of jacked him up a little bit. And they had, like, a little something went down between those two. And I think it was because the coach, who was Major Applewhite, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Former Texas quarterback,
absolutely. And I think that because of the fact that he was on the sidelines and not helping his team, I think he got a little frustrated about that.
Yeah, I think that's it, too. Because that's a strange situation to put your head coach in. If it was true that he shut himself down so as to not get an injury and potentially jeopardize his draft standing. Because right then, you want the people on that sidelines who is going to help you win the game. And if he's just standing there, he's just basically a hood ornament and not really contributing at all. So I can see Major's point, and I can see Mr. Oliver's point, because he wants to be there to support his friends, people that he knows for Houston in that big bowl game. So, I mean, I can see how it goes both sides, but at the end of the day, your coach is your coach, and you need to respect his wishes.
Yeah, that's what I say too. But I've seen him play in games now. He's a talented guy.
Yeah.
And he's a type of defensive presence that we could use. So, I mean, I could see it if he's being available at that time, even though we need line. If a talent like that is available and he kind of embodies what you want, the fast and physical that, you know, the Coach Q always promises with the defense, to me, he would fit in that, you know, quite nicely from what I remember seeing him do on the field. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But other than that, man, when it comes to combine, I listen. You know what I listen for in combine? I listen for things the guys from the small schools do.
Right.
Yeah, because guys from the major fives, they go out there and do something on the field they're supposed to. You know, they've had the best of everything for 3, 4, 5 years. You've had the best facilities, the best weight room, the best position coaches. You had if you need to lose weight or gain weight, you had nutrition. If you need to have surgery, you had best doctor, best physical care, best therapist. Yeah, you're supposed to go out there and light it up. If you don't, what's wrong with you? You know, but to me, the guys from the mid-majors, the guys from the FCS programs, from the HBCUs, the D2s, when they fight and scrap and claw and make it into the room and they show up, to me, that's the combine story. Because these guys we haven't seen on TV every Saturday. And to me, those guys are the real stories that I really look for as far as the combine goes. If somebody from a Power 5 school does something, I'm like, big whoop. And I also say that they have nothing out there to measure heart and character. So, and the guy everybody talked about never touched the football this weekend, and apparently it ain't cost him one thin dime. How does that happen?
Exactly.
These other guys lose millions, but depending on what they do in front of fat dudes with stopwatches. Can I get off my soapbox now?
That's why I have a question about, like, a lot of the kids that you see coming out these power schools versus the kids that come from, like, the more grassroots schools.
To me, those are the stories.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, do you like or dislike the more mercurial-like attitude that a lot of these kids are having? Like, the whole – because I never heard of this recently until, like, maybe, like, the last 5 years of – you know, you got cats shutting it down. Like, you know how Jadeveon Clowney shut it down, you know, a couple years ago. Or, you know, they're talking about how Zion is shutting it down, you know, to get ready for the draft and everything like that. Like
I don't think Zion shuts it down. I think we see him next Saturday.
I think
he's there to play one and go on to the NBA, but he also chose Duke for a reason. And people forget where he's from. He's from Greenville, South Carolina.
Yes.
He's watched Duke, North Carolina. He's watching, and he knows the high profile of that game. And to me, if he doesn't play in that game, what's the point of him? I won't say what's the point of him coming to Duke, but if you're going to Duke, you want to play against North Carolina, and that's the game that he was injured in. I think he wants to go to Chapel Hill and play. I think he wants to go there and shut down that crowd of 20,000 folks. You know, I think that's one of the challenges that you want to take with you to the next level, to say, yeah, I played them dudes, and I went in there, and I shut them down. So I think we see him next Saturday. If we don't see him next Saturday, then that tells you something else more about his injury than the fact that he shut himself down for the NBA. So I'm watching curiously to see. I mean, I've lived in North Carolina for worked in North Carolina for 7 years. I've covered that Duke, North Carolina game of times when all types of characters were playing in the game, from Grant Hill and Christian Laettner to Eric Montross and Antoine Jameson and,
yeah,
you know, Rasheed Wallace. That was the time period that I was covering North Carolina. Just saw all these guys who were on their way to the league, you know, play that game. And if you ask any of them, would they have traded the opportunity to play, they would all tell you, no, they wanted to play that game. And so I think that's the thing. If he's able at all, you know, we'll see him next Saturday at the end of the regular season over Chapel Hill. And a side note on that, I hope that everything is okay with Coach Roy Williams. Seemed like he had a case of vertigo in the game at Clemson and had a collapsed right before halftime. And
he
didn't come out of the locker room for the second half. So hopefully, you know, he's there. And it should be a great game next Saturday.
Yeah, we wish him all the best. And hopefully he will be on the sidelines challenging Coach Mike Krzyzewski in that big regular season finale. And hopefully Zion does play and his shoes don't explode. That's one thing that would really help.
Did you see the ad from Skechers?
Yes, and they deleted it almost immediately.
Yeah, they did.
Oh man, did you see that? I mean, for Skechers, we still get them the shoes that the old dudes get to wear. I got to say that I'm 60 years old. I like my pair of Skechers. They make them extra wide these days.
Hey, great, man. The most comfortable shoes to have, and I'm 35, right? Okay. It's all right.
Skechers and Rockports ain't what they used to be.
Yeah.
All right. I think, Sam, I think we've held on to you long enough. I think we'll let you go, and you enjoy that rest of the Atlanta United match, and I'll see you on Saturday for that big Georgia State-Georgia Southern matchup, women's regular season finale. That could decide. Panthers win it, they get the fourth seed. If not, then who knows what's going to happen.
Always a pleasure, Sam.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
No problem. Bye-bye. All right, that was Sam Crenshaw, the hardest working man in Atlanta Sports Radio. Talked a lot of stuff, college basketball, NBA, NFL, all over the place. And, boy, I don't even know what I want to touch back on because there was so much that we covered.
Yeah, that was probably the longest interview we've done.
But it was
great because it was the incomparable Sam Crenshaw, and he's always been a great friend to us on this show.
Right.
Of course, you know him a little bit personable than me and Leon do. I've met him several times, but never had lunch with him. So,
Neither have I. Yeah. But, you know, I always see him at the, unless you want to count pizza in the media room.
But, man, Sam just gives great insight, especially on Georgia sports. And just everything that we would want to know about Georgia sports, Georgia State sports. Of course, we're entering tournament time. And it's almost time for us to get those brackets filled out.
Right.
You guys kept mentioning the Montana Grizzlies. I don't know, guys. We might need to watch out for them in tournament time. I'm telling you. They might be a dangerous team.
They might be up there in the Big Sky Country.
Big Sky Conference. I think they're slated to win that tournament. So, we'll see.
And that's what I like about college basketball. Because you could see a Butler in the Final Four.
It's
possible, you know. And I wish I'd seen more of that, you know, the same way they give everybody a chance to compete in college basketball. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but I wish that college football would, you know, like John said, they've never been accused of having one, a soul.
Yes.
You know, but I wish college football would adapt the same mentality, you know, when we could see, you know, like the best teams in the country really compete against one another, you know.
So let me ask y'all this. 2 weeks from now, we having a selection show special? The selection show?
Oh, yeah, we have to do a selection. We have to do it. We'll see where everybody is. You know, hopefully I'll be just getting back from New Orleans in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament by Lakefront Coliseum over there on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana. University of New Orleans is that host institution.
Yeah.
Is where they're doing. Actually, next year it'll be moved to the Smoothie King Center, where the New Orleans Pelicans play, right across the street from the Superdome, right in downtown New Orleans.
Yep.
And that will be a lot of fun, although they're doing some very weird things with the seedings. I think now only the top four teams from the men's and the women's will actually advance to New Orleans. It's going to be a lot of play-in games, a lot of campus sites, and they're doing some really strange stuff with the scheduling. I think they want to improve, as Sam was talking about, you want to improve that strength of schedule, that NET, which took the place of the RPI, so that whoever comes out of that cauldron of the tournament gets a relatively high seed, a 13, a 4, maybe even a 12. They don't like getting the 15 seeds and being offered up to Cincinnati was last year, you know, one of those very strong teams where essentially you don't have a fighting chance.
Well, the thing is about Georgia State, I thought that they were terribly seeded last year. I thought they should have been higher than that. I thought they should have been a 13 at best. They were a 15 last year, and of course they got the bad end of the stick against a very, very good Cincinnati team. Looks like you had a chance there. Now, the funny part about this year is that the only conference that I can see stealing maybe two bids, if they don't win their conference tournament championship, is Wofford. The Terriers are ranked now nationally. I think they're ranked at 23. So if they continue to win ball games, and we're not talking about Gonzaga because Gonzaga's on the one line. Gonzaga's probably the number one overall seed right now. But in the case of them, if they lose the Big South tournament to maybe Winthrop or somebody, then that loses a bid. ACC or the Big Ten loses a bid.
Yeah, that's going to affect something.
Because now you've stolen a bid because you got to put Wofford in there.
Yeah. And same thing with Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And the West Coast Conference.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If
St. Mary's, San Francisco,
or Pacific.
Right.
If one of them happens to win that tournament by some luck, Because Gonzaga is far above that conference. They really need to go to the Pac-12, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah, but you can't take them for just the one sport.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll have
exactly.
to take all of them.
You
all
take
of
everybody.
Them.
You gotta take everybody.
What if Georgia State comes into the tournament foaming at the mouth, though?
It, you mean if they just run
man,
rampant through the tournament?
Yeah.
You have to give them a high seed. But
you have to give them a 13,
Yeah, you have to give them a 13 or maybe a 12. See, a 12 would probably be a good thing for them.
Right.
But it all depends on their showing. They can't really have close games because of what they did in the regular season. They kind of underachieved a little bit, like towards mid-January, but they picked it up since then, you know, as Sam mentioned. But, you know, they could go up there and get at least a 13 and make – we've seen 13s beat fours.
Yeah.
Right.
We've seen 13s go to the Sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it can happen.
The only problem is if you get those top two seeds, you're only going to have two games.
Yes.
You're on the semifinals and the finals. So there's really not a time enough to kind of like beat up on a lesser seed in the early round.
Absolutely.
You're not going to have that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
You know, one thing I was noticing with college basketball, do you think it would ever come a time when it would be played with four quarters instead of two halves?
Well, the women's game is like that.
How come the men? They need to put that in the men's though. Like,
it's first of all, it's firmly rooted in tradition.
Yeah,
and I think that may be one aspect where we're gonna stay like that.
Like with overtime, you know, it took them a long time to even go to overtime. Remember, they was playing just fourth quarters at one point up until the early 90s, maybe. And it took them a long time to even change from that as far as college football is concerned, right? But they're not going to even change those overtime rules, you know? So it's just certain things that are just rooted into it. Them going into four-quarter plays, I don't see that happening in the near future, man.
No, I don't think it will.
Yeah.
I think we're too ingrained having it like this. I think we're too ingrained having it this way because it is different from the NBA.
It is different from the NBA, right?
And I think that's part of why people like it so much,
right?
Because it is different. But like I said, the women's game has done that. I think it's the third or fourth year that it's been like this. And the only thing the only difference is the fouls will reset at the end of each quarter. That's really the only difference. And there's no one and one. Once you get six fouls in the bonus, it's two shots the rest of the way. Where in men's game, there's the one and one, and then you get the double bonus.
See, this is what I would do. This is what I would like to see. Any fouls on the floor and you're over the foul limit, one and one. Take out the double bonus. You only get a double bonus if you shot the ball
right.
and you got foul in the air. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, I see.
But if it's
saying.
A foul on the floor, one and one,
or if it's an offensive, or if you're, it's an offensive foul on the other end.
On the other end, yeah,
right.
Yeah. Loose ball, offensive foul on the other, yeah, or yeah, offensive foul on the other end. You know, you don't shoot.
You have non-shooting fouls.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I would switch to just leaving it at one and one, and you only get a two shot foul if you've made two shots, or if you've made three shots, or if you had three shots. You know, that's what I would do.
Right, and also, what was I going to say? Like charges. Charges on the other offensive charges, they don't result in foul shots.
Yeah, no.
For the opposing team. So that's you know, like I said, March Madness coming up in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from right now, they'll be posting the bids. And guys, did TBS, TNT learn their lesson from last year?
I think they did. I think it was too far over the top with their selections. I don't know did you see their selections, Leon? Mm.
They announced all the teams, and then, okay, this one's here, this one's here, this one's there, this one's there.
Alphabetically.
Alphabetically.
Yeah. You take the drama
out of the equation.
And you can't do that, man.
No.
When I saw that, I said, oh, my God, this is terrible.
We got to look into who came with that idea and see if they still have a job.
Well, it was simple because TBS hosted it, first of all.
Yeah, they got it for the first time from CBS.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we need to put our spin on it. We need to make it so people will say, oh, wow, it's TBS. They're doing something different. But we don't want different.
We don't want different. No. I want suspense, man. I want you to tell me. Now, what I'm okay with and what they've changed over the last 10 to 15 years is that they announced the four overall number one seeds. But the reason why they've done that is because there has not been clear-cut one seeds for the last 5 or 6 years. So the reason why they've done that is cool. I'm all right with that. Keep doing that because the one seeds, because we can sit up and have an argument about who's a one seed versus who's in.
Right.
Those are the new arguments now. So this is what I want to see. I want to see, okay, who's in Duke's bracket?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who's Duke playing? Who, are they playing the winner of some of a conference
that I don't that I've never heard of
the Atlantic versus FAMU? Because you know that because you know they're going to get a 16 bid.
Who's maybe. Going to Dayton?
Who's going to Dayton
for the first four?
For the first four. So that's what I want to see. I don't want to see this nonsense where because last year we had to wait until alphabetically. Yeah. Okay, if the O's are coming, we're waiting on Oklahoma. Yeah. Remember, Trae Young was on that team, and everybody was kind of like, well, why is Trae Young? Is Oklahoma really a tournament team? No, they weren't a tournament team, but Trae Young was box office.
Yeah,
and that's why they made the tournament.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, that's I'm all with John, man. Take all of the
all right, all we're, the in the cues, we're in the queues. Will Quinnipiac get in?
Yeah, right. Come on, give me a break, man.
Exactly. Like, you know, we want to see the team. We want to see what team's going in because, you know, because the best reaction in sports is when a team gets announced, they got a camera in one of the bubble team's locker rooms, and they go crazy.
And they go crazy. I love that.
That is great.
That is great. I love it. I love it. And then you may have the coaches on the teams that did not make it, and they're bidding their case on why they felt like they should have made it, even though they're not going to change their minds.
Exactly. Exactly. They're basically saying the committee. They're trying to say very tactfully the committee screwed up.
Yeah exactly.
They're trying very, very tactfully to say it,
they screwed up.
And then after
the show is over, I just love turning to bracketology because I love the way Dick Vitale pours his heart out for you, especially for St. Mary's. Every year, St. Mary's is a 23-14, and they don't get in
because they're in the league with Gonzaga.
Exactly, and they know damn well you have to win the tournament to get in.
Yeah, they got it.
People don't know this, but there's a period from April to say October where Dick Vitale just goes into his. He's locked in a vault deep inside ESPN.
Yeah.
And every time in March Madness, an intern has to let him out.
Out of bounds. You know what I mean? Dick, we're ready for you.
And he's coming up very carefully to the door because
yep.
he knows he's just going to get stampeded as he runs
stampeded.
Out.
Yep.
So Dick's heading to Duke in Indiana. He's
like, oh, man.
I mean, it is great. It's certainly a great theater.
It's the greatest time. Of the year, and it's actually probably ranked second to the Super Bowl. That's how good March Madness is, man. Listen, I done told my folks at work. I've already explained to them. I'm a tech. I said, listen, the only way you need to call me if is I can do it remotely for you, or if you having an issue watching the tournament. I mean, don't call me for nothing else.
And that's why I love the. That's why. Thursday and Friday, those first round games should be national holiday.
They should be national holiday.
I think I've got that Friday off.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my days off now are Friday, Saturday. So if I'm not having a softball game, you know, 10 o'clock, plop down, remote in hand.
Going.
Yeah, gotta get the four screens going. And the only time in the world, the only time where people actually trying to remember where True TV is.
Exactly.
Either that or the Impractical Jokers fans. I mean, you know, it's trying to remember. Law and Order,
because my wife watches Law and Order, and that's on True TV sometimes.
Okay,
so.
Yeah, but again, CBS, True TV, TBS, TNT, those are the greatest time of the year. And they go, and I love the first round because you're going to Albany, New York.
Yeah.
You're going to Marquette. You're going all – the only problem is some of the – I wish they would – I know why they do it. Mm-hmm. I just wish they would get their geography right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to the South Regional, but let's go to these first round games in Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, Eugene, Oregon. Why in the hell is the South Region games in a West Coast game? They could change something, I think that would be
that's the one. I mean, I know why they did it. They're trying desperately to keep the travel costs down, but it makes no sense.
It does boost the economy though for a lot of small market cities though. Like,
you know? Well, exactly. That's my point.
Yeah. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's my point. Absolutely. Just have like a West Coast regional game. in Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah.
Don't have a a Mideast game in Tempe, Arizona.
Right. Right. You know. If you're there, because we know where Jim, Bill, and Grant Hill are going to be. Okay?
They're going to be
wherever Duke is.
I was going to say Kentucky, but
they'll be
wherever Duke
is. Now, if Kentucky's there too, because again, they will host both Midwest, South, and some West games. You know. So then you got to go to different regions. You got to go to different brackets and stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah, I was at. I was fortunate enough in college to be able to attend when Vanderbilt went to a first round games with and they were there. I told you the story.
Yeah,
they were with Georgetown, UNLV, Michigan State. These is back in the day. So I'm sitting in the pregame or the pre tournament press conference. Let's see, I got John Thompson. Okay, he's Jerry Garkanian's next, and Judd Heathcote.
Yeah.
Oh, it was. Oh, I'll never forget that. That was so much fun. And I was in Tucson, Arizona that time.
Man, good.
I remember changing planes in Houston at, I guess, Hobby, because Bush wasn't around then. But, you know, just running from one end of Hobby to another, trying to make my connection to Tucson. It was a lot of fun. And I just hope that, you know, Georgia State women, they are fourth. They might have a chance to make one of these. I don't think they're going to make the NCAAs, but maybe one of the lesser tournaments, a WNIT or a CBI, one of those.
One of those.
And hopefully they'll be able to get in. Should be a lot of fun.
You know, one thing I've been noticing, you know, this year, I guess to switch lanes real fast, is that this year within the NBA, I'm actually looking forward to the Eastern Conference playoffs.
I am too.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. Yeah.
I am too, man.
Are teams playing possum? Like, okay, are the Celtics as really bad as they appear to be right now? Or are they just trying to go off and ambush everybody
right.
Dallas and Mavericks 2011 style?
Right.
Maybe. And Daniel, you had the I think it was you who had the point where either one of you said you didn't think Kyrie Irving would be back for Boston next year.
It was Leon.
It was Leon who said that.
And now you're kind of starting to see it, because this Boston team, there's a lot of talks in the locker room, man, that this locker room is not together right now. And if it's like this, if it's about as bad as the Lakers right now, then Boston's going to have a problem. Boston might not even get out of the first round. This was the same team we were talking about, and I know I mentioned it, that was supposed to be in the NBA Finals. You know, we mentioned the Milwaukee Bucks, but not in this statement. Milwaukee is just as good as anybody in the league. They may be the best thing smoking in this league. They do everything right, and because they know their position. Everybody know that Antetokounmpo is the best player on that team, and everything centers around him. And everybody else, Bledsoe, has bought into it. When they brought him over, man, that was big.
Speaking of Bledsoe, though, I'm surprised they extended him for 4 years.
They extended him 4 years.
Based on how Teddy Rozier did him last year in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be certain. I mean, if I was Milwaukee, even though they're 40-15 right now, they clearly one of the best. If not, they had the best record.
They have the best record.
Yeah, by far. But if I'm management, I don't want to become a prisoner of the moment.
Gotcha.
I would have waited until I wanted to see how Bledsoe would perform in the playoffs against more elite talent. Because you seen, like, last year when against Teddy Rozier. Mm-hmm. I mean, Teddy Rozier clowned him so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm talking about he cooked them up. I mean, I think Boston got rid of Milwaukee in, what, five games or something like that?
Five, yeah.
He got rid of him in five?
Yeah.
And then I remember, like, you know, Eric Bledsoe, who was really embarrassed by Teddy Rozier, because Teddy Rozier is someone whom we never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have been a second-year player at the time. Came, you know, in response to Eric Bledsoe saying that he never heard of him, came to the game with a Drew Bledsoe jersey on. And then after they beat him, had Drew Bledsoe in a press conference answering questions. Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good. And I haven't seen, you know, a point guard tear through the Eastern Conference like that and seemingly embarrass people. It kind of reminds me of another Boston point guard that did the same thing in 2010, in which we seen Rajon Rondo come out. And, you know, he pretty much was in Rajon Rondo's come out there and pretty much embarrassing guys. I remember, you know, he's kind of the reason why Jason Williams had to exit out the NBA 1 year. And another guard was Jameer Nelson in 2009 when Jameer Nelson tore through the Eastern Conference and was seemingly getting people. I think he's the reason why Mike Bibby lost the job.
Could be.
So I was surprised that Eric Bledsoe even had a job this year, let alone got extended. So, you know, he's going to have a good showing in the playoffs this year, you know, to be honest with you. So,
all right. Well, that's going to close us out, although we are now at the last 60 seconds. So our panel will say what's up, been on their minds that's been bugging them this past week. Leon goes first.
Well, I'm gonna keep my I know my pick to make out the Eastern Conference Finals is Toronto Raptors.
Okay,
all right.
You know, and I'm gonna stick with them. You know, I just wanted to get that in. But being I'm a Laker fan, you know, I'm gonna remain biased. It's interesting how, you know, we had the concept of expectations. You know, at one point in time, everybody was challenging. You know, people thought the Lakers were going to challenge the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Now it's like, we're losing to the Suns. I mean, we lost to the Suns.
Yeah.
We lost to the Bucks, and Giannis only had 16 points. I mean, I would, you know, the year, why has it got to happen with the year we get LeBron? You know, like, we get this man at the tail end of his career, it seems. You know, things have just, I mean, it's like the bottom's about ready to fall out. You know, we got to do better. We got to do better. And hopefully, you know, some big-name free agents will come to the Lakers and we can go off and turn this thing around a lot like that. Hopefully, the Atlanta Falcons will this year. Because, like, it's like we're becoming the Atlanta Falcons of the NBA. And, I'm you know, it's true. You know, but I want to go off and I want to split my segment into three pieces. One with the Toronto Raptors, middle with the Lakers, but I'm going to end with this. The coach of the year this year, in my opinion, will be the same reason if the Pittsburgh Steelers go to the playoffs next year, he gets coach of the year because it's all about overcoming adversity.
Yeah.
Doc Rivers this year.
Yeah.
With losing Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Losing Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
Losing DeAndre Jordan. And to a certain degree,
he lost Tobias Harris.
Him too.
Yeah.
But I was like, even his son.
Yeah. Gone. Austin. Yeah.
And we got the Clippers right now are still going to the playoffs.
In that eighth spot?
Oh, they're at the seven.
Oh, they're seven now.
The seventh spot.
Okay.
So they're still relevant. And they'll still be in the playoffs this year. So I think that, you know, this is right here. I take my hat off to Mr. Rivers. You know, I believe that he should win the coach of the year. The same reason why Steve Curry should have won.
Yeah.
X amount of years ago, and the coach from the Blazers should have won.
Terry Stotts.
Absolutely. So, that's me right there.
All right. You know, I was going to go one direction, but I'm going to save it for next week. This can't be saved for next week. I need to give a huge Bulldog pride shout out to my Tri-Cities Bulldogs, man. My alma mater from East Point, Georgia. That's right. We have made it to our first ever state championship in basketball. And I am so proud and just so thrilled for these kids, so thrilled for these guys. Just give you a brief history. Let me just give you a brief notable alumni. Andre 3000 and Big Boy, you all know them as Outkast. Candy Burris. From members of the Real Housewives of Atlanta, but she was a member of Escape, and two other members from Escape went there as well, Latasha Scott and Tamika Scott. Some NFL players, former NFL players, Tristan Davis. Let's see here. I got it right here. Randy Thomas and Tristan Davis. Me and him have met before. So Kalimba Edwards. Just to name a few people who've been there, okay? Little school, not a small school. They're in 6A, so they can't be a little school, right?
That's
right, yeah. But Just a school in a small town of East Point, Georgia, man, where this where my roots are.
Can you get them on our podcast? That's the big question.
I can try. I can try my best. I think I still know some people that are there, but you got to remember, I graduated in 2002. Now, Tri-Cities was established in 1988, of course, when you combine Woodland High School, Russell High School, and College Park High School, and Hayville High School. That's how they combined to become Tri-Cities High School, and that was back in 1988. So just imagine, since 1988, Tri-Cities High School had never made it to state. And I've seen some great Tri-Cities basketball teams, but they just couldn't make it there. But this one here might be the best we've ever had, and I'm rooting for them. And Macon, the entire city of East Point is coming. The entire city of East Point is coming. The alumni are coming, and we are coming deep. Tucker, we're coming for you. We're coming for you. John, finish it.
All right, so I guess OutKast is going to have their surprise reunion concert at halftime in that championship game, is what you're telling me. That's what Daniel's telling me.
The EP, what do you call it? EPVs? Yeah. East Point Vets.
Well, it's been a very bad year for Vanderbilt basketball this season. The men's team has lost 19 in a row. They're going to do something that has never been done in the history of the vaunted Southeast Conference. They are going to do something that will set records that will be talked of for generations and generations to come. What will they be doing, you ask? They're going to put a donut in conference play and not the right side. We're talking the wrong side for that donut. 0-4 the season in terms of their men's basketball team. Now, admittedly, Darius Garland, five-star recruit, did have an MCL tear during the third game, out for the year, but they still have some quality people left. Simi Chatou, Aaron Naismith, of course, there as well. But still, to go 0-16, 0-17, 0-18 in with the quality of players they have is something that will have never be seen and hopefully will never be seen again. And the women's team, not much better. However, they have won two games, but they've also set history, and this is actually good history if you're a Vanderbilt fan. For the first time ever in the women's program history, they defeated Tennessee in Thompson Bowling Arena. They were 0-33 before that. Now they are 1-33. And that's something that even the great Vanderbilt women's team's never been able to do. I'm talking about Wendy Schultons, Heidi Gillingham, all those players never been able to do it. This team, the one that's at the bottom of the conference with their second, with only going 2-14, I think, in the regular season, they were able to pull that off, and it just might cost Holly Warlick her job. So once again, a Vanderbilt team costs a Tennessee coach her job, and after that, I posted a meme on my Twitter handle, John_Morgo. Basically, it's the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Bring Out Your Dead sketch, where the guy whom John Cleese is carrying wails out, "I feel happy!" And that's basically how we feel, because even though it has been a horrible winter for Vanderbilt basketball, we can watch to this one, and of course, baseball starting, they're number one in the land.
Real quick question, John, before we leave here. They can still play, the men's team can still play in the SEC tournament, right?
Yes, but they'll be the bottom seed.
But they'll be the very, very bottom seed. Okay.
Yes, they could get a run going and shock the world. Woo, that'd be amazing. All right, that's going to wrap us up here on the 23rd edition of The Last Three Guys Who Do a Podcast. Thank you so much to Sam Crenshaw for joining us for our 40-minute conversation with him. Can't wait till he joins us again. Again, we have next week where we'll be talking about all these conference tournaments and Major League Baseball and the NBA, and we'll see what's been going on with the NFL Combine. Thank you so much for joining us for
Leon Brown
and
Daniel Bolton.
I'm John Morgo. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell somebody you've never met, tell your baker, tell your butcher, tell your candlestick maker. We are The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a good night.